Hello, Kels. We're glad to see you. Hope you're not following everybody around and dressing like everybody else dresses just because you want to fit in. I don't want you to fit in. I'm Jay Nemerl. This is Quasi-Indefatigable Zenilith. And we're still talking to God today. Let's talk about somebody else that isn't fitting in either. Melisinda now has her first consort. She's not yet a lady, but she's close to it. Corin already has her own house, so a lot of time Melisinda's left alone. This house now belongs to Corin, but it's expected that she's going to let Melisinda live here. Of course, that's part of the whole political thing. Corin is letting her live there so that there's going to be another reason the next time they have a get-together, which is going to be at Melisinda's investment as a lady, that Melisinda will choose to come under her sister. The more ladies you have under you as a matron, the more powerful you are. And that's the most important thing for a matron is power. Now, there may be some matrons that don't see it that way and actually do see it as kind of this loving, watchful kind of mother cow shepherding of these girls. But that's not the way Corin sees, and that's not how most women who are looking for power look at it either. They don't see it that way. It's most definitely a question of power. So Corin really wants her into that. That's why she's giving her this nice little thing about living in her mom's house. She wants to stay comfortable, enjoy yourself, spread out, stay in mom's bedroom, you know, still kind of the warm, trying to use that mother-daughter relationship, her love for her mom, because Melisinda really did love her mother, to kind of keep her under Corin, so that she doesn't go off with some friends that might be under a different matron. Of course, Corin has to do all the strokes, has to try to make people feel good about being under her. To a degree, depending on which matron you're working with, that's really kind of the way it is. You know, it might be real. They might really like you. They might really do all these things trying to make you feel better. But in other ways, they might really not. They might, you know, they might just be doing it as an act to keep you under their thumb until they can trade you with somebody. Who knows? There's all kinds of things going on. That's why being a matron is such an involved big job, because you're playing this political game. And you may or may not be. The lower down you are, the less it's a political game. The more you want to rise, the more political it needs to be, and then you get noticed, you get pulled up. Okay, so we come. We don't come to the party yet. Let's talk a little bit about the relationship that develops between Melisinda and Davor. Melisinda decided long ago that she is not going to take Davor to her bed day one. She's not going to take Davor to her bed, period. You know, it really kind of depends. She really hasn't given a lot of thought. In this book that she has that talks to her about the way things were before, the way things should be, the way God wants them to be, talks about marriage. And there's one thing she wants to do. She wants to be married. She doesn't want to have this kind of sick, twisted relationship that all these convocation women have, where there is no marriage. Men are traded around like trading cards, like comic books. And that's all there is to it. So there really isn't much relationship that's supposed to go on. Melisinda doesn't know what to do with Davor. You know, Davor's got this expectation that he's going to be a boy toy for this lady, because that's what these things are. That's what he's always been taught. Oh, it's not really a teaching. Boys don't get taught. This is the expectation. Every man just kind of learns this just over time. that this is what you do. You're, if you get the honor of being somebody's consort, she gets to mess with you sexually however she wants. She gets to mess with you however she wants. Otherwise, it's just that in the world of consorts, it's more sexual. So this is the expectation. It doesn't happen. She kind of is concerned, and she kind of orders him around and tells him that she has to sleep on the floor. She doesn't want him near her for fear that she's going to do something, or for fear that he's going to jump her or something. And over the course of days, they start to kind of come to this understanding. You know, she finds out about him. He discovers some things about her. And he doesn't mind. He doesn't, you know, who wants to be used? He doesn't really want to be used as a sexual toy, although that's his purpose in life. You know, she tries to give him the respect that he first would have, and he responds to that. He likes it. He likes being treated like a human being and not just like some possession. And he starts showing his appreciation and devotion to her. He wants to do everything he can for her. He doesn't want anything to happen to himself. He knows that, and guys know intuitively that even though the convocation, the larger group, has a lot of say over what happens to men, that the individual lady has even more say over that. You know, to say that if she likes somebody, she'll put forth her effort to keep him. And he likes this girl. He likes this girl if only for the fact that she doesn't treat him like garbage. And you know, he's very willing to do whatever she wants him to do because she's being nice to him. She's not treating him like some pack animal, like a goat. So this relationship starts happening. Of course, you know, she's been trained in arts of manipulation, how to get other people to do what you want them to do. And, you know, it's not beyond her to use these things with Davor. So she does the strokes, the caresses, the you know, you can the stick, the carrot. She's more of a carrot person than a stick person. And he's really responding. And he's really grooming up to be the kind of person he was. He used to be kind of lazy and kind of indolent. And you can still see a bit of that in there. But he's willing to put that aside. He's willing to be a little more diligent just because she gives him nice perks and stuff. Well, at some point, she decides to reveal at least some of the things she plans on doing to him. Now, she doesn't talk about all of her plans. She only talks about some of them. But she's planning on leaving. And that she wants him to protect her. She's trying to groom him up as this protector. And there's some circumstances that come up that help him to feel this way. And are some of them set up? Maybe. Some of them are just kind of incidental. You know, things are going to happen. I mean, the world's not a safe place. There's plenty of opportunity to be able to show that you're going to do that. So she's pretty self-assured here in these couple of months before she's supposed to be sucked into the convocation, that she's going to be able to do this with this guy, that Davor's going to come along, and that he's not as beholden to the convocation as he is beholden to her, which is really what she's after. She wants somebody that's more beholden to her because she's going to can do some things that are outside of normal, and he needs to come along. Anyway. So, the time comes for her to come out. Well, it's not the coming out. This is her investment now. Now you have to understand there's a lot of things that get wrapped up into this. We were talking a little bit before about presence. All these parties have presence, and the most presence come at when you're invested, in investiture. And she's gonna receive all these gifts. Now, some of these gifts have not stated, but they actually do have strings attached to them. You know, you're gonna be expected to go out and according to these guests, they might try to get you, sway you to be under a certain matron. So there's been some cars coming by, kind of seeing how things are going to go. The party actually takes place at a certain time and place, but the actual gathering of all these presents, and they're stacked in the piles, and they're marked, this is from this lady, this is from this lady, this is from this matron, this matron. They're already starting to stock up at this special place that's actually kind of rented for these things. It's called the investment house. And so anybody can come and look and see how many presents are being given by one lady, by one matron or another, trying to sway them to come under them. And it may not be for that. You know, everybody's expected to bring some gift. Some of them are little trinkets. Some are really big. And all these things have to do with influence or camaraderie or just friendship and love. You can look at it so many different ways. Anyway, she's getting a pretty good bunch. She's got a pretty good pile from her sister. She's not destroying herself. Of course, a lower lady can get help from her matron and from matrons above her to produce, you know, to try to get enough stuff to draw her under. And that's what Corin's doing. Corin's kind of, her matron is looking to upgrade. And having a breeder under one of her matrons that can produce a lot of daughters, that's a commodity. Especially being able to have this consort she has, that's a very valuable prize, especially if it proves that he really does produce daughters. That's going to be a bargaining chip in other ways. And so, all these things kind of come together. So there's these big grazing piles of things. And Melisenda's looking at this too. Of course, the impression of other people is that this is how she's going to be swayed. You know? This is how she's going to, this is how somebody's going to get her. So that means the presents start going up. Melisenda has a whole other reason for doing it. She wants to get lots and lots of gifts because she's going to do something with them that's unexpected. There's a heck of a trade in these gifts. You know, there's gift dealers. There's gift dealers that you take money for them, and there's whole houses of the. This whole house of the convocation, that this is all they do, is play this little gift game. Anyway, so she's presented with these things, these opportunities. well, here we go. I'm here in Clovis now, traveling toward the end of a trip. I get this stuff all done. Okay, so the day of the party arrives. There's presents stacked everywhere. Of course, she gets to keep all these gifts. You don't get them back. You don't get them back just because she doesn't come under you as a matron. You know, it isn't like that. It isn't like when you make these out. These are really gifts that you're giving to her. If you're really wanting to get her, you'll spend the money knowing that you'll never get it back. But that's okay, you know. That's just where life goes. So, there's presents everywhere. Because Melisandre gives every impression of being a person who can be bought. And so it really doesn't matter who she goes under at this point, I would imagine. But you'll find that out later. So the party begins. Everybody goes in, all this stuff. Davor's there as her chief consort, standing next to her, and his job is to make, mostly head up the disposition of these gifts. You know, taking them in, packing them up, taking them back off to the house. Well, Melisandre has told him specifically that she wants him close by. And that, although he would usually put this in the hands of specialized people, this is what they do. There's a whole industry around these investments. They happen often enough that you can actually make it your job. There can actually be houses that are dedicated to just doing this. But, you know, there's several families that do it, so you don't know which one's getting it, so there can be some confusion about this, and there is in this case. You know, nobody's gotten to the point where they say, well, who's in charge of this investment? You can kind of keep out there that they're still kind of dealing, and that they have been talking to this patient, talking to this person. When they get together, they'll figure out that nobody's really gotten the contract for it yet, because they don't see one contractor or another out there slaving away at it yet. But you usually don't do that until after this thing is done, or during the festivities, because you usually have slimy people taking care of all this heavy work. This stuff is typically loaded in a barge, and barges, because there's going to be a lot, and then they're taken to the house. Most places are along rivers, because that's how this culture is. Very river-based. There's not carts or stuff like that. It doesn't really happen that way. Anyway, so the whole thing about Melisandre's investment, and it keeps all this stuff going, it keeps everybody kind of up in the air, is the fact that she's kind of kept mum about everything. We don't know who's managing the investment. Her consort very much is staying mum to and staying right by her. And all these wonderful things. And what ultimately ends up happening is everybody finds out that she hasn't prepared anything. And when it comes down to it, it really doesn't matter who she goes under. So for this first part, when they're playing their little shuffling game, she actually buys into many more gifts. Hey, guys, come on, get out of the way. She actually buys into many more gifts because she kind of rescues a coup against the queen. There's somebody who actually challenges the queen for the leadership of the convocation. And she wins, and the queen arranges to lavishly give her some really great gift that was kind of held in reserve. And And what she does is she takes that gift, she takes all those things, and then all of a sudden, she arranges to make sure that all the biggest, most expensive gifts are put on the first barge, which wouldn't be normal. Normally, up until now, there's already been barges going back and forth, up and down. And on this first barge, she and Davor take it over, commandeer it, and sail off, run away. That's all I have time for now. I've got to get to work. There's things to be done. This is Jane Elroy. You're listening to Quasi-Indefatigable Zenless. Don't be a cow. Don't be a follower. Be like Melisenda. See you later.